This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live at TSN1290.ca, good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel, and we welcome you to the first NHL Midweek of 2015. We have 2 hours of hockey talk for you this evening. Joining us is going to be Tyson Nash, Phoenix Coyotes analyst. Coming up in 30 minutes' time, we'll be joined by Tyson to talk about the Jets and the Coyotes. Let's get right into it, gentlemen, talking about your Winnipeg Jets. Coming off of the hard-fought, really, not upsetting, because it's not upsetting, but it's a disappointing loss Monday night against the San Jose Sharks, where they had a point in their grasp, even though they were far outplayed, especially 5-on-5, they were far outplayed. They had a point in their grasp. They end up losing it to their chief rivals for the wild card spot in the Western Conference right now, and now they start their six-game and eight-night road trip, which begins tomorrow night in Arizona. You know, do you think there's going to be a hangover to the Jets as they enter this road trip because of that loss on Monday night?
Not really, Drew. They seem a lot more mentally strong than they've been in the past. I mean, obviously, it's a heartbreaking way to lose a game, especially not getting any points and all that. But I don't really see it translating to the next game. Never mind the fact you get a three-day break, and you're playing an awful team in Arizona that got just killed last night 6-0 by the St. Louis Blues. David Backes gets 4 goals. So you're really, you know, if you were going up against Anaheim after that game, yeah, okay, feel, you know, you don't feel great about yourself, and you're going up against a deep team that can take advantage of you. Arizona's not the team that can take advantage of you, certainly not offensively. So I wouldn't be too worried about a hangover. Paul Maurice seems to have these guys programmed and a lot more mentally tough than they were before.
Yeah, and you know, back to, you know, Drew's talking about it, I think you could easily make the argument that the San Jose Sharks outplayed the Jets. I didn't think it was as bad as the shots indicated, Richie. I think you throw in all of the penalties and the Jets killed off, I think, all of them but one, wasn't it?
Yeah, everything but the first power play of the game.
Right, and that included a 5-on-3 that I thought the Jets looked really good on. I thought, you know, they were right in that game, and the most important thing about that game was that it was 4 seconds away from 3 seconds, whatever it was, from going into overtime, and you'd lose the point, and that was disheartening. But as far as, you know, the carryover, hangover effect, I agree with Richie. I don't think that, I think in years past, possibly, when the team was a little bit younger, you know, you think about, especially, you know, the first year, the second year, the lockout year, you know, when the Jets really seemed to get into more extended losing streaks, guys. But the Jets are in a losing streak right now of sorts. They've lost 3 of their last 4 games. Yeah. And, you know,
clean losses, too.
And they're clean losses, as you mentioned, Richie. And you can't have a situation where you come back on this road trip and you only have 2 points. And especially against Arizona, that's a game that is a must win, in the sense that because you didn't get as many points as you wanted on this most recent homestand, you have to at least get 2 points in that game and hope that you can possibly get 4 of 6 points. The California games, as we know, so guys, are going to be very tough.
What you're saying is they need to steal one of the games either in Los Angeles or Anaheim Saturday or Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. And Anaheim is going to be sitting there, and the Jets have not played very well against Anaheim, especially the last game. I believe it was 4-1.
Yeah, the Saturday night game after the Sunday afternoon game.
Yep, that Saturday night game. So, you know, you're talking about a road trip that it's not necessarily the hardest road trip that the Jets have ever gone on, but considering that it's 2 games back-to-back and, you know, you're coming off of probably not the best stretch. And, you know, the thing as well, guys, is that other teams are catching up. And, you know, I know Dallas lost last night, but, you know, Colorado shuts out Chicago, which was really unbelievable. Varlamov made 100 saves or something like that. But you have other teams that are catching up. Mm-hmm. St. Louis, as you mentioned, Richie, you know, with another big win over the Coyotes, and they spanked the Sharks the other night. And then you had the Sharks come into Winnipeg and take a clean 2 points. Now the Sharks are starting to pull away a little bit. And
they've I'm going to interrupt you there for a second. The Sharks have actually overtaken the Los Angeles Kings. Mm-hmm. The Sharks are now in third place in the Pacific Division. The Kings are tied with the Jets for that, for the final wild card spot.
Right, and Richie, you can start looking at all of the other teams in the Western Conference. You can even look, you know, as we said, a little bit down the standings at the Minnesotas and the Dallases, but the reality is you just have to keep getting points. You have to keep getting points any way you can, and, you know, I think if the Jets are able to pull out 4 of 6 points, that's a successful road trip. I don't think you can expect to win all three of these games. It's just with the schedule and the teams that they're playing, and L.A., as we know, guys, hasn't really started to hit full gear. I think the Ducks have, and, you know, especially with Corey Perry back over the last week, they really have. But the Kings, again, I mean, we saw it at the beginning of the season, Richie, when the Jets went in there and the Kings handled them pretty easily.
Yeah, and the Kings, as they are, really dominant at home. 14-4-3 at home. So not an easy game, and a heavier team than the Jets have been playing lately. The Jets have been playing a lot of skilled speed teams. Minnesota, the Islanders, Toronto. San Jose's bigger, but not heavy. I wouldn't say they play a heavy game. LA plays a heavy game. Anaheim plays a heavy game. Arizona's not very good. So it's going to be tough. You get 4 points, you're laughing. If you tell Paul Maurice he's going to get 4 points out of six on a three-game trip here, he's very happy with that.
Especially because, I mean, what you're really doing at that point in time is you're stealing back a couple points that you lost when you didn't go to overtime against the San Jose Sharks on Monday night.
Yeah, I mean, sure. That's one way of looking at it, Drew, and that's true. The other thing is you're getting your guys back now.
Well, let's talk about the impact of, it appears Zach Bogosian's going to be back in the lineup on Thursday. Evander Kane's going on the road trip, so that tells me that you're likely to see him at some point.
I think we'll probably see Enstrom, Stewart,
and Kane.
And Kane all on the trip,
Enstrom,
yeah.
Enstrom and Stewart skated for the second straight day today as well. So it sounds like they're, you know, within a, you know, day-to-day sort of situation, is, I believe, how Paul Maurice spoke about it.
What happened to all of this? These guys are going to be out until February.
They don't tell you anything. I mean, they don't even tell you what the injuries are.
But I understand that, Richie, but, I mean, it was pretty much they're out until February. It was just, to me, I guess, I know what you're saying. I mean,
that's classic media market stuff. They just want to play off, like, there's no, you know, we're not going to have these guys for a while. We're not going to have them. Don't ask about them. And then suddenly they come back right away. If they said they were going to come back in early January, you'd be asking about them every day.
It's a fair point. That's a good way of looking at it there, Richie. I agree with you, Ezzy, because especially Evander Kane. I thought Evander Kane, I mean, they never actually said his injury. We all think it was because he blocked that shot of Jay Harrison,
yep.
And it was going to be middle of February. Well, all of a sudden, I know they said he's a fast healer, but, I mean, to heal within, really, a couple weeks here? That's really fast. And, I mean, I think that speaks to Evander Kane. I mean, there certainly is an element of being in such good shape that allows you to heal a little bit quicker, I think, in that case.
Could be. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what the injury was.
Sure.
And I'm not a doctor.
Right.
But you're a lawyer, though.
But you'll play one on radio.
I play one on the radio.
Yeah, okay. So, you know, talk about the importance of getting those guys healthy and back in
the
lineup.
I mean, look at the defense, Drew. I mean, this defense is not an NHL defense. And, boy, they've played well, though. You got to give the guys credit here. You know, credit where credit's due. The team defense, the defenders who have come into the positions that are above, as far as I'm concerned, above their talent level. And the coaching job here, everybody's done a real nice job. So you're going to get talent back in the roster now, and you got Bufflin doesn't have to play 30 minutes a game. You know, Bogosian can come in and eat some of that. Bogosian can make the pass out of his own zone. At times you wonder what he's thinking. You know, it's not now he's the best pass, but he can make that pass. And probably even more importantly in Zach Bogosian's case, he can skate that puck out of his own zone, and he can skate it through the neutral zone. That's an element that not many players have. Not many players have the power and speed of Zach Bogosian. So it's a guy you can play in all situations. Adam Party played 9.5 minutes last game on the penalty kill.
Yeah.
Keep that in mind. So right there, boom, Bogosian needs a bunch of that. It's huge. You had Enstrom, obviously, and Stewart. I mean, you're getting all your core guys back. Stewart helped, the toughness factor, blocking shots, playing on the penalty kill as well. People don't like Enstrom on the power play, whatever it may be. The first power play unit looks great, moving the puck real well, but Enstrom will help the second power play unit.
I mean, Jay Harrison, who scored a power play goal on Monday night, would be the first to tell you he's not a guy you want on your power play for the most part.
That's right. So you're going to have all that coming back into your roster. And, I mean, Kane helps that. The third and fourth lines, I'm going to ask you guys a question, put you on the spot here. Third and fourth lines the Jets have been rolling out for the past couple of games since Evander Kane got injured. How many goals total do those six players have?
I'm going to say 5.
No, not that low, Drew. Adam Lowry has 5.
Lowry have 5 on his own at this point? Okay.
Has he?
How many goals have the two lines scored since Kane has been out?
All year, combined.
So you're asking Thorburn, Peluso, Slater, Lowry, Gagliardi, and Hallestrom.
That's right, yeah.
So combined,
10 or something like that.
12. Yep. So you're looking at 2 goals a player. And Evander Kane, warts and all, can score 12 over that period of time if he's going.
Just
so
the threat of Evander Kane being back on the line
just changes where you're playing. You know, you're playing in your defensive zone, you're going to get more tired, you're defending all the time. So there's huge ramifications. I mean, essentially what you're saying is, aside from Jacob Trouba, who I think is the team's best player, although Dustin Byfuglien certainly has something to say about that lately, you're going to be going from time of injuries to injury-free.
Pretty good. They've been playing, at least in practice today and yesterday, Zach Bogosian alongside Jay Harrison. Your thoughts as that as a pairing?
Well, it makes sense because you had Grant Klitsam there before.
Yeah.
And, you know, Enstrom's not... Again, we should say that we don't know exactly the timetable for all of these players, but there's a good chance, possibly four guys. Truba's probably the only guy that we're not for sure... We can say for sure is not going to be on this road trip at all. I don't even think he's traveling with the team.
I would agree with that comment that Trouba would be... Yeah, nobody expects to see Trouba in the next four games.
In a little while. And and so, you know, there's a possibility, as Richie was talking about, that Stewart and Enstrom come back. And so, you know, back to the pairings, I think everyone would agree here that Ben Chiarot and Dustin Byfuglien over the last little while has been such a good pairing.
For sure.
That you're probably going to keep those guys together, and then because
you cannot, right?
Right. I don't think you have the option, and it's like the Ladd Little Wheeler line too, yeah. Richie. You don't have the option of breaking up a line that can't. Night in and night out is your best line. So I think, you know, Jay Harrison and Zach Bogosian, to put those two guys together. You know, Zach Bogosian's got obviously a little bit more offensive talent, but those guys are both big players, mm-hmm. and you know. I think especially Bogosian coming up against, you know, the California teams, I think, you know, is invaluable because, as Richie mentioned, and, you know, you're 100% right, Rich, you know, those teams are hard to play against. They're heavy, you know, the quote unquote heavy games to play. So a guy like Bogosian, you know, even though he's coming off of an injury, you know, he's a physical defenseman, and as is Harrison. So I think you're going to run into trouble, though, you know, as far as who sits out. And we saw Julien Brouillette placed on waivers, as you mentioned, Drew. You're going to have problems when Stewart and Enstrom are back, because then who do you squeeze out? And it's going to be one of Adam Party or Paul
Party for sure,
and both
Party for sure,
and probably Postma. So I mean, because Trouba's used to playing with Stewart, you'd probably say, Richie, that Stewart is on the third pair then.
Well, but to
ease him back in,
you know, when they eventually are all back, but you never know if these injuries here, if they're all going to be back at the same time.
Sure.
So if you look at it this way, say Chiarot and Byfuglien, Bogosian and Harrison, and I mean Enstrom and Stewart both play the left side,
right?
But maybe you want. I actually don't know enough about Harrison to know if he's playing that could play the right side as well. But Postma. You might want Postman there. You might want to take out Harrison. I don't know. I mean, Chiarot and Byfuglien have worked real well. Good problem to have.
Yeah. Yep.
But I think Harrison and Bogosian works well. Again, you're not going to Harrison's better than Party. So you're going to put Harrison up there and play more minutes. Klitsam, you know, depending on his injury, as to your point, what do you do roster-wise with him? You know, he can play both sides. He has played both sides at times.
If the Jets happen to lose one of these guys on waivers, so be it.
Well, it depends. Well, which one you're talking about. I'm trying to remember if Klitsam did play both sides. But
Richie, it's a precarious situation. Well, sorry to cut you off, because, you know, you put Julien Brouillette on waivers and he'll go down to St. John's, unless he's claimed, right? Because we still have to wait 24 hours.
They're not worried about losing Julien Brouillette.
No, I know they're not, but I'm just saying right now on this road trip, you have potentially the option of using Stewart and Enstrom. We're not sure if they're able to come back on the weekend, but right now, as it stands... Really, if you think about it, the only extra defenseman they have is Keaton Ellerbe. I believe Keaton Ellerbe hasn't played in 7 weeks. So I think one. I'm just saying, you don't want to be in a situation where you only have one player, right? And that's due to roster issues.
Let me ask you, Richie, if they lose Party or Postma or Klitsam, or if they have to put one of those guys through waivers, I mean, who are they?
Well, Party, you don't have an issue losing on waivers. I think the issue is Klitsam, again, who I personally, if you have to put one guy through waivers, I would put Klitsam through waivers because I think his contract might be prohibitive for him being picked up. Postma would get claimed on waivers.
Right.
Now, he's struggled. And, like, you see, he's squeezing his stick too hard, but he's got skill. He's a right-handed shooting offensive defenseman. He will get claimed in a second. Somebody's going to claim him.
So you don't put Postma through. I mean, obviously not. So then you're down to Party or Klitsam. And, I mean, I don't think you're... it's a good problem for the Jets to have, that if they happen to lose one of those
Party's
guys.
Party's not the issue, is Klitsam. And I think if you're forced to do that, I question whether he would be claimed based on his salary and commitments for next year with a cap that's uncertain, especially with the Canadian dollar tanking.
Sure.
Versus the U.S. dollar. That's what I think. But I agree with you. You know, it's not the biggest decision, but you're not going to put Chiarot because he's a value at a young player.
He's not
going to
get claimed.
Yeah. Well, I think Postma and Chiarot both get claimed. Party, I don't think gets claimed personally, and
if he does, so be it.
That's what I mean. But yeah, if he does, fine. And the other question then would be Klitsam, who you probably want to keep around because you can put him in there, and he has played better with bigger minutes, but salary commitments factor.
We'll find out how the Jets decide to deal with it. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Jets and the Coyotes tomorrow night in Phoenix. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Steen moving on. Backhands to the middle. Backus, he scores! It's a four-goal game for David Backus. He's put the Blues on top 5-0. What a play on a feed from Steen. And David Backus has four straight. 16:45 to go, third period.
David Backus single-handedly dominating the Arizona Coyotes last night in Glendale. The Jets, of course, play tomorrow evening there, a game you can hear on TSN 1290. Puck drop, 8 p.m. local time here in Winnipeg. There are going to be a lot of Winnipeg Jets fans making that trip this whole weekend, apparently. Tons of Jets fans heading down,
yeah,
doing the 3 and 4 nights, especially with the Timu tribute night on Sunday. Of course, it's Timu weekend here on TSN 1290, so stay tuned for all your coverage of that. This is Coyotes head coach Dave Tippett following last night's game. He said this to the Arizona Republic. Quote, "You can't play like that. That's garbage. We weren't even close in that game. Let's be honest. That's not a goaltending issue. That's a look-in-the-mirror issue." Coyotes are pretty much, they're right in that running for the Connor McDavid sweepstakes. Mm-hmm. That's a bad hockey team the Jets are playing tomorrow night in Glendale.
Yeah, it's a bad team, Richie. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, they're in a position that really isn't surprising to any of us. I had the Coyotes when we previewed the season at the beginning of the year. I had them second last in the Western Conference to Edmonton. And Edmonton,
so far, that's playing out exactly right.
Well, Edmonton,
all of your
Arizona
predictions have actually been pretty on so far.
Not, well, no, well,
that frightens me a little bit.
Anaheim to win the Cup, Islanders, Tampa, Eastern Conference semi, Eastern Conference final. Okay. Like everything you've predicted so far is scary.
I did pick the Hawks to win the Cup a couple years back, but that's not exactly a pick that a lot of broadcasters were making. But I guess I'm calling myself a broadcaster. But
I believe the Winnipeg Free Press called you that a couple months ago to begin with.
Richie, I'll take myself down a notch a little bit, though. I didn't pick the Jets to make the playoffs. I didn't pick the Predators to make the playoffs.
Okay.
I didn't pick the Canucks to make the playoffs. So, I mean, I can't say that I'm 16-for-16 right now. But this Arizona Coyotes team, Richie, I think they miss Radim Verbata a lot. I think they miss Mike Ribeiro a lot. Mm-hmm. Mike Smith has struggled this year. I really like Mike Smith. I've always been a Mike Smith fan. He's having a really tough year.
I don't love him.
I think you look at, you factor in all of these things.
Hang on, we have to talk about Mike. You mentioned Mike Smith, so we have to talk about his numbers.
He's having a rough year, Drew.
He's 42nd, which is dead last in the NHL in goals against average, with 3.57 goals against per game. He's dead last in save percentage at .882. He's not having a rough year. He's having a legitimately asked, is he still an NHL goaltender kind of year?
Well, right. And I mean, the Arizona Coyotes have some pretty good defensemen. I think Oliver Ekman-Larsson, I mean, you're talking a couple weeks back, I guess it's a month now probably, Richie, now, we were talking about, you know, is Jacob Trouba a top 20 defenseman? And we all agreed that he is. But Oliver Ekman-Larsson, you're talking about a top 20 defenseman. Keith Yandel, offensively, has been consistently up in the top 20. I don't think defensively
makes him a top 20 defenseman. He doesn't defend.
The defense as a whole, Richie, I mean, once you get past them and Zdeněk Mihalik, who we'll talk to Tyson Nash about, who's a UFA coming up, you're going down to Brandon Gormley and Connor Murphy, and they had Schlemko. He's not there anymore. This isn't the best defense, so, I mean, you can't put it all on Mike Smith. As I've said time and time again,
their forwards stink too.
Goals against average is a team stat. Mm-hmm. So, I mean,
so is save percentage.
Save percentage to a certain degree is, but probably
less
more so.
Sorry,
I mean, I'm just saying, Drew, I mean, you can't put the entire failure of the defense on Mike Smith.
I'm not saying you are. But Devin Dubnyk's numbers are a lot better. They're not great by any stretch, but, you know, there's a .920 save percentage there and a 2.64 goals against average.
So what we want to do is go back to last offseason and talk to everybody who predicted Devin Dubnyk would have way better numbers than Mike Smith. And then it'll be silent, and we'll go to the next topic.
Okay.
I mean, it's so unpredictable, right? How do you know?
Sure.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's talk about this Coyotes.
Edmonton Oilers has been looking for a goalie since Dwayne Rolison.
And that was almost a one-year wonder with Dwayne Rolison, too.
And and Dubnyk couldn't make it there. Goes to Nashville, where they're looking for a backup. Last year, looking for somebody to play at all. And can find his way there, and out of shape, doesn't work hard, all these things, and suddenly he's in Arizona now, and boom.
You forgot Montreal. He did go to Montreal.
What's Joaquin Gage doing these days?
Let's talk about the Coyotes team then. So what areas should the Jets look to exploit?
Well, I mean,
they're the better team on paper.
There's all areas here. I mean, Drew, the problem, you look at their goal differential, it's third worst in the league, and 92 goals for guys. They can't score, and you ask, well, why can't they score? Well, they don't have any talent, really, up front, right? So they've got the 26 most goals for in the league, which is obviously terrible. It's bottom five. And the problem that you have if you're Arizona is you can't score, and most people probably knew you weren't going to be able to score. The problem is that you're third worst in the league at preventing goals. They're really not good at anything. What do you exploit it? Well, I mean, you watch them play. They're not going to kill you on offense, and they're not that good defensively. I mean, I don't want to simplify it, but this is just a game where you're coming off a 6-0 loss, Arizona. The Jets want to get on them early. They definitely have no confidence. A bunch of mishmash of players here. Depending on which goalie you're playing against, obviously there's going to be a confidence issue. If you can get up early on this team, that clearly, as Dave Tippett mentioned, he's not happy with. So you don't want that pushback early.
Right.
You know, and again, they're not that good defensively, but if you give this team a lead and they don't score a ton, they're going to try and shut it down. And the Jets haven't exactly been tearing it up offensively, especially with the lack of depth up front. Even the second line, you know, hasn't really been going at all cylinders recently the past couple of games.
The power play has covered a lot of warts for the Jets' offense as of late.
The power play has, Drew. So, again, you get down, you know, you let this team get a goal or two, especially early, and you're a little bit worried. If you get up on this team, I have a hard time believing Arizona's going to be coming back on you. And, again, you know, confidence is a big thing right now, and you talk about confidence in regards to the Jets and playing against the Sharks and losing. So how important is this beginning of this game? And, you know, it may be a cliche, guys, but Jets lose with 3 seconds left, get no points against San Jose. Arizona gets killed 6-0. Who's going to come out and want it early and play a more confident game? I would think the Jets are going to come and take this game quite easily.
Well, to the Jets' credit, any time that they've had sort of a letdown or a disappointment, they've always come back strong the next game. I point to that game at home, that Sunday night game against Philadelphia, where, you know, they had the lead, they end up giving up the lead, mm-hmm. they lose in overtime, and then they come back on that Tuesday night, right before the Christmas break,
against Chicago.
And beat up and dominate the Chicago Blackhawks. So I wonder if that loss against the Sharks, the disappointment of that, fuels this team tomorrow and maybe into the weekend as well.
Well, the Jets have already beaten the Coyotes 6-2, you know,
first game
on opening night. And we know that the Jets are playing a lot better now than they were at the beginning of the season when they lost four of their mm-hmm. first five games.
Yeah, the Coyotes aren't.
So what's changed? I mean, you know, another note as far as the Coyotes goes, Martin Hanzel didn't play last night. He's one of their best players. The only strength for this Coyotes team, and it was a strength last year, is their power play. And the reason their power play is so strong is because of Yandel and Ekman Larson. Those guys have 12 combined power play goals. They're two of the best power play guys in the league. But, you know, Richie's point that I think, you know, resonates the most with me is the staple of Dave Tippett teams forever, and that dates back to when he was the coach of the Dallas Stars, yeah. where that they were very good defensively. You start with the goalie out, and you don't give up a lot of goals. The Coyotes were never an offensive juggernaut. They've never been. So what's changed is this team is not as deep as they were.
That's exactly right.
Well, in any area.
Worst penalty kill in the league as well. The Coyotes have the 30th ranked penalty kill right
point.
Now.
If you're going to be not able to score, you better defend. They're not doing anything well.
Right. So the Jets should be able to take advantage
of it. This is an easy game. Let's just say it. This is an easy game. If you're going on this 3-game road trip here, playing back-to-back, now no travel. It's 40 minutes away from each other, LA and Anaheim.
Yeah.
You know, no travel. You're playing two really good teams. You can say what you want about LA struggling. Still really good at home. Still obviously a very deep team. You got to take game one. Now that's got to be a shoo-in, and then you got to try and get a point or two in the next two games.
Let's head to break. When we come back, Tyson Nash, Phoenix Coyotes color analyst on Fox Sports Arizona, is going to join us. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Shortly past 6:30 in the evening, welcome back to NHL Midweek. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from Fox Sports Arizona. He's a Phoenix Coyotes color analyst, Tyson Nash. Tyson, good evening, and thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
How you doing, Tyson? Happy New Year to you.
Yeah, to you as well. I'm just coming in from the pool, so bear with me here.
Yeah, we're doing the same thing, except the pool is a little bit frozen. It's now a skating rink. Got to start. Obviously, got you on to talk about tomorrow evening's Jets Coyotes game in Glendale. Last night, the Coyotes losing 6-0 at home to the St. Louis Blues. Is that rock bottom for the team? You know, so far this season, or do you think they can still sink lower than that last night?
Oh, well, they've had a couple other doozies this year, and I think that's part of the frustration for this hockey club and the fans here in Arizona. You know, you've seen this team take out, at the time, the best team in the NHL in the Anaheim Ducks. They beat San Jose. They beat the defending Stanley Cup champions, the Los Angeles Kings. And then, you know, last night was just, talking to some of the players, they were embarrassed. They weren't happy with the effort. The compete level was an all-time low. So definitely lots to be fired up for tomorrow night. That's the greatest thing about being a pro athlete. A hockey player, you get right back on the ice typically sometimes the next night.
Tyson, before we get into some specific players that we'll see in tomorrow night's game between the Jets and the Coyotes, as far as where the Coyotes are at right now, second last in the Western Conference, you know, at the midway point of the season, you know, if you're Don Maloney and you're looking at this team, are you starting to maybe look at moving some players? Are you waiting till the trade deadline? Where do you think he's at as far as the evaluation of this year goes at the midway point?
Well, you know, I haven't personally talked to Don about this. It's probably a better question for him. But if you want to play role reversal, you know, I think, you know, then knowing Don Maloney, he's always looking to better this team for the future. With Andrew Barraway coming in the other day, they talked a lot about this team's future and making sure that they were going to build a winner long term. So I don't think Don Maloney's going out there right now looking for any quick fixes. I think that, you know, as you mentioned, you look at this team and where they sit in the standings, guys that are unrestricted free agents, guys that, you know, teams are going to probably be looking at for playoff runs. We have a few of those players. You know, I think Don would be crazy not to have those names floating around out there right now. You know, I think teams make the biggest mistake at waiting too long and getting players at that point. And then there's just not enough time to mix and chemistry, going into the playoffs. So, yeah, there's guys. Antoine Bermette, I know his name has been talked about a lot. He's an unrestricted free agent, and he's a guy that a lot of teams would want.
Tyson, when you look at, you know, Dave Tippett and you see what happened to Randy Carlyle here in Toronto, we're going to talk about that more later in the show, but the pressure that, you know, Carlyle faces, and you look at Dave Tippett, obviously there's always pressure to be a coach of the National Hockey League, but the Coyotes are really struggling defensively this year, which is his staple, and we all know Dave Tippett can coach, but is there any question as to his job security, or is he bearing some of the responsibility, but the players are also bearing a lot more of the responsibility than maybe they would be in a Canadian market?
Well, I think there's probably a lot of general managers out there that would love to see Dave Tippett fired, mm-hmm. because they would be the first one in line to get a coach like Tippett. I can tell you that. He's one of the best coaches I've ever watched, worked with, and been around. He reminds me a lot of Joel Quenneville, who I had in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. And you look at what he's done, you know, under the circumstances. And again, you still kind of have to remember what this team has gone through with the bankruptcy issues. And Don Maloney has not been able to run this franchise on a level playing field like the rest of the league. They basically had 1 year to do that, and they've lost some pretty key pieces during that time. It's tough to get free agents when you're not, sure if the team's going to be here from 1 year to the next. So moving forward, I think in a couple of years, you could really, put the finger, on Tip and on Don Maloney. But at this point, I don't see either of them, those guys going anywhere.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. Our guest is Tyson Nash, Phoenix Coyotes color analyst. Tyson, I mean, it almost seems like every time we have you on, we're required to ask an ownership question. We don't really want to, but, the new ownership is now in place, and official mm-hmm. Andrew Barraway is the new majority owner of the team. Is this solidify the ownership group even more, or is this just a business deal that happened alongside, or was there problems with the previous owners and their cash flow, let's say?
Well, definitely no problems. I'm pretty close to the situation here. I think if anything, why Andrew Barraway. First of all, you know, any, you know, guy with childhood dreams and money like he has, you know, and wanting to own a sports franchise, he's wanted any team. You know, he wanted the New York Islanders. I believe he was in on a basketball deal. So this is a guy that was hungry, wants to be in the sporting market, and he's no dummy, I can tell you that. So he's definitely had his people look at the books with a fine-tooth comb, and he knows that this team and this ownership, current ownership group that we had in place before, was doing an outstanding job as far as ticket sales, corporate sponsorship, season tickets. Just everything was going in the right direction, and Barraway just helps that much more. His influx of money gives the team flexibility. They're going to be able to spend more next year if need be, as far as free agents go. Additions to the building that they've made already, just to get this, you know, as first class of an organization as they can. So it only helps your franchise. And just looking at the face of Shane Doan during that press conference, the smile on his face, hearing a new owner say, you know, we won't stop at anything but a Stanley Cup is got to be pretty exciting for a captain.
Now, Tyson, on the ice, finally, you look at this team, in between the pipes was obviously a key for many years, and Mike Smith signed the big deal a couple of years ago. And we said before you hopped on, in the last segment, who expected Devan Dubnyk to be at, you know, 918 save percentage and Mike Smith to have struggled at 882? And that's only one stat, of course, but the idea is, you know, it kind of captures that Dubnyk's been really good and surprisingly good this year, and Mike Smith's been surprisingly a poor performance thus far. Nobody expected that, and goaltending's so hard to figure out, but how do the Coyotes rectify the situation, and can they have any success if Mike Smith's not playing at least close to the top of his game?
Well, you're 100% right. I surely didn't see this coming. I really thought Mike was going to have a bounce back year and put up some big numbers and really help this team. That has not been the case. But as you mentioned earlier, I think your first question of the interview is just how this team is playing defensively. Mm-hmm. You know, your goaltender almost takes on the identity of your team, and you can't put this all up on Mike Smith's shoulders. Yes, you struggled, but man, I'll tell you, defensively, this team has struggled as a group. They're going through some growing pains. They've got real young defense. That's trying to find their way. You got guys like Gormley and Connor Murphy, you know, really their first year in the NHL. That's one of the toughest positions as a young defenseman to kind of, you know, get ready to play every single night against the best players in the world. So, you know, obviously you'd love to see Mike Smith. He'd love to see himself get back to where he knows he's capable of playing. It's a work in progress. He definitely, again, didn't have his best game last night, but he's looking to bounce back tomorrow.
Tyson, I'm sure you were watching, like a lot of Canadians, on Monday night. Team Canada was able to win their first gold since 2009, and Max Domi, you know, had a huge part mm-hmm. getting the goal and the two assists and being named the tournament's best forward. I guess the question is, how excited are Coyotes fans, for Max Domi to arrive, especially considering this year's been such a tough year for fans?
Well, yeah, you're right. I mean, this is Max Domi. He's been the talk of the town. I mean, talk of the locker room, talk of all the hockey fans, around the ice stand here, the local hockey rink, people are excited. I mean, this is a guy that, you know, you would have loved to see him, you know, play this year, but he clearly wasn't ready. He is where he needs to be in junior, getting that last little bit of confidence before he makes that next step to the pros, whether it's starting out in the American League or coming right to the NHL. You know, I think if Max was here, it probably wouldn't be a good environment for him to be around, just with, you know, the way the team has gone so far. But man, this kid is so talented, and the future is so bright. When you look at guys like him, Pelini, Samuelson, both Samuelson mm-hmm. brothers, for that matter, we got a kid right now, Reeder, who stepped up this year, and has really, you know, made a big impact and a big splash, around here in Arizona as well. You'll see him tomorrow night, just how fast and talented he is, and this is a team that needs more talent, needs more offensive firepower. Definitely this is exciting times for Arizona, even though it's been a tough stretch this year.
And final question for you, Tyson, heading into tomorrow night's game, you know, that'll be broadcast on this station. What's the key for the Jets if they're to beat the Coyotes, and the reverse, what's the key for the Coyotes if they're going to be able to beat the Jets?
Well, obviously the penalty kill has been really the Achilles heel this year for Arizona. Mm-hmm. They allowed you know, a few more last night. They got to be disciplined, and that has not been the case. I think if Winnipeg comes at them hard, plays that big, heavy, fast, down low game, it seems like the Coyotes tend to get into, you know, penalty trouble. And then Winnipeg can go to work. And as far as the Coyotes go, you know, they're a forechecking team. They hound the puck. When they do that, and when they're the hardest working team on the ice, they give themselves a chance to win the hockey game. So, if you see that, you see the defense, very aggressive and up in the rush, guys like Keith Yandle and Oliver Ekman-Larsson, that's a good sign, for the Coyotes, not so much, Winnipeg, but, Yandle and Oliver Ekman-Larsson are the key to everything.
Tyson Nash is the Phoenix Coyotes color analyst on Fox Sports Arizona. He's a frequent guest here on NHL Midweek. Tyson, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Enjoy the game tomorrow. Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The podcast on TSN1290.ca.
There's been suggestions within the organization that you're a difficult guy to coach. Is there anything to that?
I don't think so. You know, that's a weird question for you to ask. So on a day like that, you know, your coach.
You're the best player on the team, and if the coach is going to.
You think it's my fault? Is that what you're saying? Is that what you're saying?
Saying that you're difficult to coach.
Is that what you're saying? Okay.
I'm asking you a question. Are you difficult to coach, do you think?
I don't think so. Okay. I play. Hey.
Thanks, Bill.
This guy's such an idiot here.
What's that?
He's always been like this here.
Phil Kessel, Dave Festrick of the Toronto Star with a little bit of a tete-a-tete yesterday in the Leafs dressing room. Following practice, following the announcement that Randy Carlyle has been relieved of his duties as Leafs head coach. It's amazing that in Toronto, how quickly the story didn't become Randy Carlyle being fired. It became about Phil Kessel. And I think that goes really hand in hand there, because, you know, something to be said for the fact that Phil Kessel may have just gotten the second coach fired in Toronto, Ron Wilson being the first, and we'll play Ron Wilson coming on later on in the segment, and now Randy Carlyle being the second. Any problems with the question? You know, and how much responsibility does Phil Kessel have to bear here?
Well, I mean, I don't have a problem with the question. I don't have a problem with the answer either, frankly. Drew, you're going to get an emotional reaction of a player, and that's being kind of called out there by somebody in the media. And again, the question is fair, but I think the reaction is fair. I kind of like that Phil Kessel shows emotion in his reaction. If that's an issue that you have about his game, although he does play emotionally, certainly at times, and there's other times where he doesn't show much emotion, but is he the one solely responsible for the firing of Randy Carlyle? No. Does he play a part in it? Sure. I mean, I'll tell you who plays a big part in the firing of Randy Carlyle is not just the players, but who put the players together. That's Brian Burke. I mean, that's the whole organization for a long time ago. You're talking about John Ferguson's effect on the team. Seriously, you are, because everybody's move for GMs, there's a lasting effect of what's happening there. And Carlyle came in, and did I think he ever had a team that was very good? No. And we're in Canada where expectations are out of whack. So Ottawa thought they were better than anybody else did. Everybody in Ottawa, or at least the management, or ownership specifically, thought the team was better than anybody else did. Paul McLean's fired. Okay? Players are inmates running the asylum. Toronto. They appear to think that they're better, the Leafs do, or the city of Toronto, whatever it may be, the fans, that the Leafs are better than they are. Fire Carlyle. And, you know, I don't think it's a quick and easy solution. And especially in Toronto, and you're going to hear from Michael Tracos in the next segment, it's not a quick and easy solution. This is a long time it's going to take to fix this all. And it was a stressful time for Randy Carlyle. And you look at the squad they put together, a mishmash of talent, of guys that, while you acquired talent in trades by sometimes not giving up much, you took contracts with that, then you signed extensions. It's just a mess. And the part that bothered me the most, and I know that, you know, they could get to the contract extension, and maybe that's kind of a, you know, we're going to eventually send you on your way. Here's a little bit of money, you know, to deal with that. But why even, and I asked Michael Tracos this, why even bring back Carlyle? Why even have Nonis quasi-running the team when you know both those guys were on their way out as soon as Shanahan came in? Why? You didn't give him a chance. You fired his assistant coaches. You hired other guys. And then you said, okay, do the job. So I'm going to take all the power from you, but do the job. And did he do a great job? No, Randy Carlyle didn't do a great job. But hey, the guys before him, he did a better job than the guy before him.
Yeah.
And after a while, you can keep looking at the coach. What about the players? What about the GM? So the coach is the easiest move here. And I just think that Randy Carlyle got the short end of the stick here at the end of the day. You guys know that I'm a Randy Carlyle fan. I think he is a good coach. He's struggling. I don't think this is his best job, but I don't think this was ever suited for him.
Did you think he was getting fired after the loss Saturday night here, Ezzy?
I can say this with 100% accuracy. I told Rich after the game that I didn't say he was going to be fired, but I said I wouldn't be surprised. Did I not say that, Richie?
You did, and you were in the scrum with him. So Ezzy was in the Carlisle scrum.
And I remember what Richie's response was, and again, I didn't predict that he would be fired, but I said I wouldn't be surprised. 5-1 on national TV on Saturday night. The Leafs have been struggling for a long time now. Rich made a good point. He said, well, not now. They'll wait till the end of the season. And I didn't disagree because the Leafs are still in a playoff spot.
Yeah.
It's not like the Leafs are out of the playoff picture here, guys. The Maple Leafs are entrenched in a playoff race right now, and yeah, they're competing with Florida and they're competing with Boston and a bunch of other teams there.
Isn't that the point, Ezzy? Like, if you said to Randy, if the Leafs fans and the brass that Randy Carlyle would have this team in a playoff position on January 7th, say, hey, take that.
I think, Richie, you look at
you, so what do you do?
You look at, you know, you mentioned, you know, the assistant coaches, Scott Gordon, and some of the other guys that were fired in the offseason. Really bizarre, Drew, to fire guys that are clearly Carlisle guys and then keep him around because he's got 1 year left on his contract. I mean, let's be honest. We said this at the beginning of the year. He was a lame duck coach, and we didn't know, you know, there was no indication Brendan Shanahan coming in and Dave Nonis wanting him to sign him to another contract. But the reality here is, as Richie mentioned, the team top down has a lot of issues here. And the core of the team, and I think this is why a lot of the attention, guys, is being focused on Phil Kessel, but the core of this team, so you're talking about Dion Phaneuf, and we saw him sign that contract during the HBO 24/7 series. He's under contract, what is it, till 2023 or something like that? You have guys like Phaneuf.
2021 for Phaneuf, 2022 for Kessel.
Yeah, so you're also talking about Bozak is signed through 2018. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You've got Lupul signed through 2018. He can't stay healthy.
James Van Riemsdyk,
you got
same
Van
thing.
Riemsdyk. I like that contract. I mean, Van Riemsdyk, he's a top goal scorer. But
let's cater to the best player. And like if you cater to Kessel, then you end up being Dale Hunter, Adam Oates, and Bruce Boudreau.
But the problem, Richie, and I think the argument you're trying to make is the core is flawed, and Kessel is just one piece of that core.
Right. I mean, Kessel is your third best player on the team, and you're fine. You're fine. He'll score.
Right.
It's fine. Can't be your best.
And Kessel's 27 years old now. It's not like Kessel's a young... I mean, he's relatively young, I guess. I'm 32. But the thing is, relatively speaking, the core of the team, I think, has its flaws. And, you know, everybody likes to point at the possession numbers. And, yes, the Leafs' possession numbers aren't very bad. Some teams that have bad possession numbers
are very bad.
And, yeah, and Colorado guys won the division last year with bad possession numbers. So
let's score the second most goals in the league. I mean,
yeah, they scored the goal. They put the puck in the net. Let's play Ron.
You also don't need to tell me that, you know, the stats guys are telling you that this team is not very good. Well, so did the drunk guy on the street on Saturday night. And he told me that on Friday and Thursday, too. I mean, does anybody watch this team play? I mean, they're not very good. But, like, hey, did you expect them to be good? They're in the playoffs, for God's sake.
They're exceeded expectations, sure. Let's play Ron Wilson. This is Ron Wilson on TSN 1050, Leafs lunch yesterday, talking about Phil Kessel.
These 2 weeks on and 2 weeks off, and you just hope that you can get him playing his best hockey for as long as possible. You can't rely on Phil. It's just the way it is. He comes and goes, and he gets emotional, and he lets that affect his game and his relationship with other players. Phil is a very emotional guy. When he's going great, everybody loves to play with him. Everybody wants to play with him. But when he's not, he's a hard guy to get on board, on your side. But if you do get him on your side, it's good for 2 or 3 weeks. And then, again, it goes.
You know, you don't hear, that's Ron Wilson, the, I guess, two head coaches ago of the Toronto Maple Leafs. You don't hear a head coach in the NHL talk about a player that like that very often.
Well, yeah, because Ron Wilson probably won't get another coaching job. That's why you hear that.
Right. Exactly. I mean, this is the guy who realizes he's probably not getting another coaching job, and certainly not in the, you know, in a Canadian market or in a big market.
Well, there's a World Cup of Hockey coming up.
Yeah. I mean, he absolutely torches Phil Kessel in that interview. Not to the surprise of anybody else, but it's rare to hear it articulated so clearly and so evidently that how...
But again, like, how much... Wilson said, and everybody wants to talk about it, how much of that is a surprise? Like, what did he tell us there that we didn't know?
Well,
nothing.
Well, we know, Richie, that Phil Kessel isn't the best two-way player. I mean, you're talking about...
He isn't.
Know,
yeah, but it's no surprise.
No, it's not a surprise. You're right. You're right. And, you know, it really reaffirms what has been said for the last, 5 years now?
I mean, he's going to score two goals and play two shifts, and he's going to... And hey, most guys can't do that.
Sure.
Does he have flaws? 100%. Doesn't battle on the puck a lot. Doesn't battle on the corner a lot. All that stuff. Sure. Doesn't back check. Sure.
The problem
is score goals.
The problem is of Brian Burke's making when he made Phil Kessel the centerpiece of this team. We were talking about, you mentioned this on air, Richie. You mentioned if Phil Kessel is your second best player or your third best player, you're a Stanley Cup contender.
Right. But look at how teams are built. I mean, Jonathan Bernier, Richie, is a number one goaltender. And he's played pretty well for the Leafs. He hasn't been the best goalie in the league, but they've found a number one goaltender. And you look at, you know, some of the other issues on the Leafs, and it starts with the leadership of the team.
But there is no leader.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you have good offensive players, and you can throw James Van Riemsdyk in there, and Mike Santarelli's done a good job. But you're talking about who is leading the team and who... the core of this team. So you've added guys like David Clarkson and you've added guys like Daniel Winnick, but the problem is the core of this team is not good enough. It's to pay the prices. I mean, like David Clarkson.
It starts with Kessel and Phaneuf. I mean, both those guys aren't going to do what it takes to win. They're going to win some games based on their talent.
Right.
But they're not going to win, you're not going to have 100% of your energy each and every game. And when those guys don't have 100%, they don't dig deeper to try and find it. They just chalk it up to a loss and go on.
Well, again, and just like Phil Kessel, you know, is not a two-way player that's going to lead you to the Stanley Cup like Jonathan Taves did for Chicago or Andre Kopitar has done for LA. Dion Phaneuf is not a good enough number one shutdown defenseman.
He's a second pairing guy.
And you've given both those guys a combined, how many years, Rich? 14 years of contracts? 7 years for Phaneuf?
We are two with a really strong one. I mean, there are, don't get me wrong, but you're right, Ez. Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. And then that's the problem that you have. But again, who put this team together? Randy Carlyle didn't make these trades.
No. Brian Burke and Dave Nonis. John Ferguson before him.
But Dave Nonis is such an interesting guy because he made a lot of decisions here I didn't agree with, but... You wonder how much he's been handcuffed by, you know, following Burke in both of his opportunities.
Yeah,
he's if you remember in Vancouver, the chance he had with all that money coming off the Sedin's coming off the books and whatever he would have done, the flexibility he did make the Luongo trade, which was obviously fitting for tonight. Yeah. But there was opportunities there, and he never really got an opportunity to shape that team. And you wonder here if he got boxed in as well, and if that's going to be in cost. He's going to eventually get let go here.
Sure.
And next segment, listen to the answer about Brendan Shanahan from Michael Tracos, because I find that to be fascinating.
Let's head to break. When we come back, Michael Tracos talking more about the Leafs. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
To NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. This segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. About 90 minutes ago, Richard sat down with Michael Tracos of the National Post to talk about the Leafs' decision to relieve Randy Carlyle of his coaching duties. Here's the interview. It starts with the following question. How big of a surprise was it to you that this happened yesterday?
Yeah, that's a good point when you're saying that it happened yesterday. I think all of us were expecting it was going to happen at some point this season. Just for the fact that you don't get a guy to hire new assistant coaches and with a prerequisite that one of them has to have head coaching experience if you think he's going to last the season or even last the 2 years of his extension. So we all thought it was going to happen. A bit surprised that it happened yesterday. To be honest, I thought it was coming down the pipe, but possibly I thought he was going to at least get a chance to maybe get one more rebound going in terms of this road trip that's coming up in California. I thought that might have been kind of the opportunity where he either saves his job one last time or that he gets yak. So the fact that it happened now, it's surprising, but in the same sense, it's not really that surprising.
Do you know what his relationship was like, Michael, with Steve Spod and Peter Horacek?
From what I could tell, it was pretty good. I know he was allowing Steve Spod to input a lot of ideas in terms of roster decisions. And then with Peter Horacek, the new defensive system that the Leafs have been playing this year, that was basically Horacek's system that he kind of implemented. So from all intents and purposes, it was a great working relationship. And then even from a media perspective, he was allowing Spod and Horacek to kind of take their turns and addressing the media on days when Randy didn't want to talk or just needed a break. So it seemed like it was a great working relationship. And I know the hiring process took a bit of time, and I think that was for the sole reason as to Randy was going to hire a couple guys. He wanted to make sure that they had his back and that they could work together in union, so to speak.
The players and Carlisle, is there a disconnect there?
From the outside looking in, you would almost have to assume so, because here's a guy who's preaching a message that the team had to play better defense and had to do certain things in terms of whether it was back-checking or playing a cycling game offensively. And Carlisle's words, but he was pleading, he was coddling them, he was basically begging them to adhere to the system. And for whatever reason, the players just weren't willing to do it. So whether it was a really trying to push, a square peg through a circle or something, but something wasn't working there, and the message was getting lost, or the players just weren't willing to do it on a nightly basis. So from that perspective, I could say that he didn't have the team's ear in that regard.
Joined by Michael Tracos of the National Post talking about Randy Carlisle being fired from the Toronto Maple Leafs. You know, you look back at his tenure, and Michael, it didn't last very long, but it felt like it was a long time, I guess, because of the attention that he got. He gets hired late in the season, and it gets 2012, and then he has the run in the lockout shortened season against the Bruins, and obviously the loss in Game 7 there last year with all the media, you know, talk about him and if he was going to lose his job. And then this year, did he get a fair shot at it?
When you're talking about how long the tenure was, I think this almost took like 20 years off his life.
Yeah, I know. It's like the president of the U.S. You look at him.
Yeah, exactly. Like whatever hair he had come in with, he had lost significant amounts probably after this job. And even this year alone, when you think of like the salute gate, the fact that the team didn't salute the fans after one game, and his conversations with the media about how Reimer had performed in Detroit that one night, where he said it was just okay. And it seemed like everything the Leafs and Randy Carlisle did took on a life of its own. So to get back to your question, to get a fair shake, it's kind of tough to say, because he did get a two-year extension even after how disastrous things were at the end of last season. And to get that extension kind of surprised a lot of us, because if there was a time to fire Randy Carlisle, that was it then, right then. He had just, Brendan Shanahan had just been hired on as the president, and rather than fire Carlisle, they gave him an extension and said, remove your assistants, and like I said, find some new ones. So in that regard, it seemed like he did have an opportunity to possibly save his job. And then in the same sense, with the roster he was giving, I don't know what you're really going to expect. Like, the team that's assembled today, it's basically a bubble team, and when you look at the standings, that's where they are. What really hurt Carlisle is that during some stretches, it looked like the team was pointing in the right direction. Like, they had just gone 10-1-1, basically, going into the holiday break. And they followed that up by losing 7-9 games. And the loss against Winnipeg, I think, obviously, that was the last straw. Like, it was just coming off a second of back-to-back nights. You don't expect the greatest of efforts, but that was a team that just quit from the moment the puck was dropped. So, and it was right after that game that Randy obviously saw the writing was on the wall and basically said, listen, I don't have the players. I wish I could basically change the players that he had. And, he made a couple comments where it seemed like those are the kind of comments you make if you know you're on your way out. So To that degree, it's tough to say that Randy was in a position to succeed.
You talk about the players, Michael, and their comments yesterday. Did you think that they were a team that expected that as well? Do you think that they took responsibility? You know, not so much in words. Do you think they actually take responsibility, or is this just kind of everybody's placing the blame elsewhere?
It's tough to say. This isn't a team where the accountability level is particularly high, and that core group, where you start with Diafanov and go to Phil Kessel and James Van Riemsdyk, Tyler Bozak, there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of really awareness as to how bad they are. Like when you bring up the fact that they're being outshot, the team keeps saying, well, there's different types of shots, and Diafanov made an excuse a week ago saying, well, we're playing a lot of games in a lot of nights, so what do you expect? Of course we're going to get outshot. It doesn't seem like a team that really cares about how things are going. So the old cliche, you're not going to change 23 players. It's easier just to change the coach. And I think that's what the hope here is with management, is that, you know what, you're not making a huge change in terms of, you're not bringing in a Dan Bylsma right now. You're not bringing in a Pete DeBoer, but you're firing your head coach and you're sliding Peter Horacek over into an interim role. And they're hoping that basically is enough of a spark to kind of get them through the end of the season. Then they'll probably assess things and maybe go after a Mike Babcock or see if maybe a Todd McClellan is available in San Jose. But right now, I think they're just kind of hoping for maybe baby steps to kind of eke out a playoff spot, because the East is not very strong this year. And if you are going to make the playoffs, this is it.
Joined by Michael Tragos of the National Post, talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs firing Randy Carlyle. What's next? And I guess that you just kind of answered that in the last question there, in your answer, excuse me, Michael, about what could be next. I want to talk to you about the desirability of that job. You know, you hear about Toronto Maple Leafs. People talk about the New York Yankees, and everybody wants to be manager, coach. Are there some people now that will steer away from this job opportunity because of what accompanies it, pressure, media attention, and all that?
Oh, I think you have to. And I think all you have to do is read Ron Wilson's comment to Toronto Radio a couple of days ago, where he just basically said, the core isn't strong enough, but he kind of read between the lines, and he's just saying this is a pressure-filled job where everything that you do is under scrutiny. And you know what? If Randy Carlyle's coaching in Anaheim and he's got his team in a playoff spot right now, I don't think he gets fired. But the fact that there's so much scrutiny here in Toronto, and this radio show is dedicated to why the second line is not scoring as much as it should be, I think that's hard. And beyond that, you just look at the roster, and I don't know what kind of hope there is to kind of turn this thing around. Whether you've got a Babcock coaching here, or whether you've got a Pete DeBoer, I don't know what you can do if this group doesn't change. And this is a team that hasn't drafted high, or when they have had high draft picks, they've traded them away. You've got a lot of players who are tied up for a lot of years at a high number that you can't probably move, and you're right up against the cap already. So this is not something that's going to get turned around in a year or two. This is probably another 5 years away from being a championship contender, if done properly. So if you're a head coach and you're a free agent head coach, I don't know what the desirability of coaching in Toronto is, aside from the fact that if you were the guy to get it done, well, then your name becomes legendary, especially in this market.
Ooh, which is interesting. You look at Randy Carlyle, and you mentioned, Michael, he comes into the season with new assistants, and you look upstairs, Dave Nonis, he had his assistants, Dave Poulin, Claude Lazelle, they're not there anymore. Obviously, we hear a lot about the new guys working in the front office in Toronto, but if you look at what happened to Randy Carlyle, is Dave Nonis next?
Yeah, you would have to think so. And you just look at the amount of people that have been hired, whether it's a Kyle Dubas or just recently a Mark Hunter, and a lot of people think that Mark Hunter is probably going to be the next GM of this hockey team, and we'll have to see on that. But if I'm Dave Nonis, I'm not feeling too comfortable. Even if I'm part of the scouting staff, I'm not feeling really comfortable right now, and nor should you be. If you're a team that's made the playoffs once in the last 10 years, and it was during a lockout shortened season, and you didn't get past the first round, well, why should you hang on to your job? Why should you be allowed to kind of keep things going? It doesn't make any sense. So if I'm Dave Nonis, I'm definitely worried about my job security. In the same sense, you can't really Dave Nonis was saying, you can't really do anything to basically try to save your job in terms of major moves. You have to work at it as if it is the long-term goal. And I think that's the reason why they have a Brendan Shanahan there, is to kind of keep things in check and make sure that no one is being, no one's trading away the future just to try to get or save their jobs and get in the playoffs right now.
Final question, Michael. I know you got to head out and cover the game. Why didn't the Leafs fire Carlisle, and if they're going to fire Nonis, why wouldn't they have made those moves in this previous offseason, kind of knowing that both of these guys, one's already gone, and one appears to be on his way out?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know what? That's the kind of question that Brendan Shanahan should be answering right now. And yet, here's a guy that, since he's taken over, has been oddly silent.
Uh-huh.
And the guess is that he's really still taking a lay of the land. And that's part of the reason. The other part of the reason is probably is he's trying to keep the heat off himself while he kind of bides some time.
Mm-hmm.
And there's really no reason if he made those moves in the off season, then you know what? If they don't work out, then maybe the fingers start kind of getting pointed at him and whether or not he's doing a great job as president. Right now, no one's even talking about Shanahan and the job he's doing. It's still on Carlisle. It's on the players. It's on Nonis. So maybe there's a rhyme and reason to that.
Michael Tracos of the National Post, one of our favorite guests. Thanks very much for joining us on NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Anytime, guys. I appreciate it.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
20 minutes past 7 in the evening. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. This segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, an essential part of your protective equipment is a proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Gentlemen, Team Canada, the drought, which apparently was big serious thing, is over as they've won gold Monday night defeating Team Russia.
I'm with you. Like, it's not like I'm sitting here thinking, oh, Canada hasn't won World Juniors. There's something wrong.
Yeah.
Like, that was never a concern.
No, because they would win every single year if they had their full roster.
That's also true.
Playing in the NHL.
Yes.
So, I mean, Team Canada wins this tournament with a handicap or plays in this tournament with a handicap every single year. But that's we've hashed that to death already, as he tends to disagree with us, but that's fine. That's why we're an open forum of conversation here on NHL Midweek. But let's go back to Monday night in the game. 5-1 Canada leads. It seems like it's all said and done. Russia storms back with three goals that make it 5-4, and Team Canada is eventually able to hang on for dear life. Your thoughts on the gold medal victory there, Ezzy? I know you sort of have the most passion about the tournament of the three of us.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a big win for Canada because they haven't won it in 5 years, right? And because of all of the colossal collapses that they've had over the years. And it was impressive. And you go through the tournament and you don't lose a single game. And, you know, you badly outscore the opposition with the exception of course, the gold medal game. But, you know, you look at the roster and Connor McDavid is expected to go first overall, but you didn't really have any superstar firepower when you think about all of the prospects that weren't there. And you could start with Aaron Ekblad, and you can go down the list of a lot of players that are currently in the NHL that are 18 or 19 year olds. But it was really impressive that you had depth on all the forward lines, and you had a defense that was led by Josh Morrissey and Madison Bowie of Winnipeg. And it was just a very, I felt like this team was a lot more workmanlike than, for example, the 2005 team. I mean, the 2005 team was just ridiculous. Nobody touched the puck. You were there in Grand Forks. Mm-hmm. I was there. It was ridiculous. And you had every single one of the players on that team, with the exception maybe of a few guys, mm-hmm. are now superstars in the NHL. So this team, I thought, was a lot more workmanlike, and I thought Benoit Grue and Dave Lowry did a great job, keeping this team focused on the game in hand and all those cliches that we heard on TSN over and over again. But, you know, Drew, you talk about, it's obviously, not a situation where Canada has to have a hockey summit, but, they needed to get back into the gold here, and it's just for the reason that, it depends what you think that means. What does that mean? Well, it means that you're the best hockey nation in the world for that age group. And I mean, if your agenda is to not like the tournament, then you know you're going to say, oh well, it's just a tournament. Well, you know, what does it mean? Well, why bother playing at the Olympics, right? What does that mean? It's the same thing. So I mean, as far as you know, Team Canada goes, I think you know you have to look at this and say, you know, the future looks bright. And again, I think for me at least, you see what Slovakia did, and you see what Denmark did. And I look at it and I say that this is a tournament that still is, you know, loved by millions of people across Canada and around the world, and I still think it has a purpose.
I think the Slovakia bronze medal win is the best story coming out of the tournament. You know, Team Canada winning is nice and all, but in terms of the development of the game, I think the Slovaks winning bronze is the best story by far.
Yeah, I agree with that, Drew.
And I would say the Danes getting into the playoff round is probably the second best story. You know, those are
both. I think the best story is the Leafs now losing 3-1.
They're down 3-1 to the Washington Capitals right now. That's okay, Richie.
Couldn't resist.
That's a good cheap shot at the Leafs. It's perfectly allowed.
No, it was a successful tournament. They had a ton of skill on this team this year. And I mean, if you want to go by the bare bones of it, they're just deeper than everybody else. I mean, the Americans weren't deep enough. And the Russians, a lot of the Russian top-end guys had some surprises, but they just don't have 1 through 18 are not at the level of Canada, right? So Canada's rolling up McDavid on the second line, whereas in every other team, he'd be on the first line, and that top line was tremendous. Sam Reinhart really impressed me in the games that I saw, playing a more mature game, and it really is a 19-year-old tournament, too. We talked about that with, I guess, on Saturday. And
Sunaya Sapurji.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think that, and you know, Fekale, goaltending, I saw the stats on TSN talking about the years that they succeed and the years they don't succeed. Sure, that's obviously a factor, but they just have so many guys. You know, Darnell Nurse impressed, I think, and people in Edmonton are excited that he's not there, I think, is actually why they're excited. In all honesty, he's able to develop at a slower pace.
I think Craig McTavish is rushing him up to join the roster right now so they can get into 29th spot.
Yeah, so, I mean, overall, though, you're talking about a Canada that still puts out a more talented, deeper squad. And this team also could skate. That was a huge factor. You know, I like that they picked more skill guys maybe they had in the past. And it was a good coaching job, I thought, and I read a lot of people liked the job that Benoit Grue did here. And Tom Rennie, one other thing, Hockey Canada-wise, a lot of pressure on Tom Rennie to take over for Bob Nicholson and all the success Bob Nicholson had. Nice for Rennie to get a win immediately, feel some confidence in himself and in the program, and that'll serve them well, I assume, going forward here.
Yeah. As he quickly, any players really jump out to you, be it Team Canada or any of the other teams you saw in the tournament, guys that sort of may have been under your radar that took a step forward?
Yeah, not just on Team Canada, but some other players like Austin Matthews on the U.S. who's projected to go high in 2016. But, I mean, if you're a Jets fan, you obviously have to be very happy with the way Josh Morrissey, you know, you saw that beautiful pass that he made to Connor McDavid in the gold medal game.
Housley to Solani right there.
Well, it was incredible. And, I mean, you know, there were other players that, you know, maybe don't get as many headlines. That's the thing with the World Juniors, though, Rich. I mean, you remember back in the day, I mean, you had, you know, players like Jason Allison having amazing tournaments.
Brendan Morrow.
And Braden Schenn. And, yeah, I mean, that's the greatest thing about the World Juniors. Every year, these guys become heroes. But, you know, yeah, there were certainly no shortage of guys on Team Canada. Braden Point was one guy. I thought Nick Ritchie was really good. Nick Paul. There was a lot of Nicks on the team.
Mm-hmm. Nick Ritchie just got traded, actually, this evening, I believe, in the junior team. As that, they're all gearing up for the Memorial Cup run now. All the real contenders are loading up with players.
Yeah, and then Drysdale was traded.
Yeah, and then you got Richie Morrissey and Bowie that are going to be playing the rest of the season for Kelowna. Mm-hmm. They're a good team in the WHL. So, yeah, there were a lot of good players in the tournament. I mean, Godla and Slovakia. I mean, you got to really give him tons of credit. I mean, the guy was unbelievable. Slovakia wasn't really considered to be a medal threat at all. And, you know, they go home with the bronze medal. So it's really impressive. And I know that's something about the tournament. I think, you know, I mean, sure, we can sit here and we could say, you know, what does this mean? You know, I just think about where Canada's at right now, you know, and you look at not only what's happened in the last two Olympics, but the World Juniors and also the Ivan Hlinka tournament. So you look at how Canada, to me, is just continuing to show how dominant they are at hockey. And the thing is, there were blips there. And really, you look at the last few years, and sure, the World Juniors, they haven't won a gold since 2009, but they were in the semifinals every year.
I don't think that there were blips so much as there was just sort of the timing where the tournaments fell based on where the players' development was at, where the best players' development was at.
I think what's happened with, you know, the development of certain nations, I think you've seen Russia fall off. I think you've seen the U.S. Continue to improve. I mean, to me, it's Canada and U.S. almost every year. To me, Russia is still there. But I still think when you look at, you know, getting down to the big games, you know, Russia continues to struggle in those big game situations. And you look at the talent that they're pumping out, they still pump out excellent players. But I think you're starting to see maybe
it's all depth issues.
Canada's pulled away a little bit.
Yeah.
Not that much, because I still think that you have many good countries. I mean, Finland winning the gold medal last year. But I think you've seen Canada really dominate at every single level now. You know, for a little while. So it's nice to see. I mean, it's not like, you know, there aren't areas that they can improve. I think goaltending, for one, I think, you know, other countries have caught up, and Canada isn't producing as many top-end goaltenders. But as far as forwards and defensemen, specifically defensemen, I think Canada's always number one.
The other thing to take from it is that it's McDavid clear number one, Eichel clear number two. I think this tournament solidified the fact that it's McDavid's one and Eichel is two, and there's really no debate. That's from what I could gather, and I saw them both play a bit. I didn't see a ton of games, but from what I read, it's not really much of a competition anymore, is that McDavid proved to be that player and got better as the tournament went on, in big games especially. And Eichel maybe didn't show as much as some wanted, especially if he's going to take over for McDavid at the number one spot, which seems very unlikely at this point.
Yeah, Rich, I agree with you. I think Eichel was trying to do too much a lot of the time, especially, you know, against the Russians, which obviously they weren't able to get to the semifinals. And I think other players, guys like Dylan Larkin, who's a Red Wings draft pick, were more impressive than Eichel. He's still a great player, but I agree with Rich. This tournament really doesn't do anything for these guys' draft stock. I think Rich agrees with me, but if anything, it really solidified Connor McDavid as the clear-cut number one.
Agreed wholeheartedly. Before we go to break, we remind you that this weekend, TSN stands for Timu Selanne Nation. Beginning Friday morning on The Big Show and all weekend long, we're celebrating the legend of the Finnish Flash and inviting listeners to do the same via Facebook, email, Twitter, using hashtag Timu1290, and on the phones. Plus, on Sunday, we can announce this now, a special edition of the Jacuzzi Hot Tubs of Manitoba pregame show. Brian Munns will go one-on-one with the Finnish Flash, Timu Selanne. So keep your radio tuned to TSN 1290 like you always do anyways, but all weekend long. And of course, we're involved in that, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday. Note the special start time with the Jets playing at 9 o'clock, 3 p.m. for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show come this Saturday afternoon. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Boston Bruins and their continuing struggle. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Maybe they're getting along in the tooth. Maybe Char is not what he was. Maybe the window is closing on this group. But when I look at Krejci injured a lot, when I look at Char injured a lot, when I look at Lucic vastly underperforming, Brad Marchand vastly underperforming, Patrice Bergeron vastly underperforming, I don't know of any team they could afford to have that many really good players not playing very well at all. And I don't know if there's a trade that remedies that. I mean, you could go out and trade Lucic right now, but does that make Bergeron, Krejci, and all the other guys on that team play better? And if they don't, then I think you're just kind of spinning your wheels and maybe you set yourself back. And I suspect Pete...
TSN's Bob McKenzie speaking earlier today about the Boston Bruins. They continue to struggle as they're currently out of a playoff spot, and now the pressure is even ramping up a little bit more as the new CEO of the Boston Bruins, Charlie Jacobs, son of Bruins owner Jeremy Jacobs, has ripped the team's performance, saying the following, and I quote, "I'd say without question this has been a very disappointing year. It's unacceptable the way that this team has performed given the amount of time, money, and effort that's been spent on the team. To see it delivered the way it has is unacceptable. I can tell you that at the moment it's a very fluid situation that's being monitored closely. I don't have any answers for why we're underperforming, because if I did, I would have tried them long ago. Again, Charlie Jacobs, new Boston Bruins CEO, son of Bruins owner Jeremy Jacobs, with that quote per CSN New England. You know, pretty strong words. I'm not sure that Charlie Jacobs really should say anything, given that he's a new CEO and given that he's the owner's son, and that's his, I guess, credential to make hockey commentary. But the Bruins, you know, the numbers really do bear it out.
He essentially owns the team, Drew, so he can say whatever he wants.
Of course. I know he owns the team, but I mean, you know, he's certainly no hockey maven is what my point was there. You look at the Eastern Conference, as we've well documented on the show, a very weak Eastern Conference. The Bruins continue to sit outside of a playoff spot. And right now, if the playoffs were to start sooner rather than later, you know, once all the teams catch up in terms of the games they have in hand, the Boston Bruins would not be a playoff team this year. And that would be, well, I think it would be quite safe to say that'd be quite surprising.
Yeah, and Rich, the problem I think too right now is everyone expected, including myself, the Boston Bruins to be right up there with the likes of Tampa Bay and Montreal in the Eastern Conference. And, you know, Bob McKenzie touched on this. You know, you had significant injuries to the two best players on the team. Well, two of the best players on the team. Patrice Bergeron is arguably the best player on the team, but David Krejci and Zdeno Chara, you know, were out for significant periods of time, roughly 20 games each. But, you know, you go back to when the Boston Bruins were last in Winnipeg. And to me, it just doesn't look like the same team as we've been used to. And, you know, after the year after the Bruins won the Cup, Richie, the team didn't change much from year to year. You'd have one or two new players come in, you know, a guy like Jerome Iginla after Pittsburgh didn't work out, you know, players like this. But the core of the team stayed the same. And, you know, in recent years, you know, they've unfortunately lost a few pieces year after year. So you're talking about this year, obviously, Johnny Boychuk. You're talking about Sean Thornton, Iginla. So you're talking about important pieces of the team. And especially when I think of those guys, not only can those guys score, those guys are physical players. And a guy like Johnny Boychuk has been missed, especially with Zdeno Chara when he wasn't out of the lineup. And, you know, obviously Adam McQuaid has been injured too. But I think, you know, to what Bob McKenzie was saying in the clip that we played, Patrice Bergeron has definitely struggled a little bit offensively, but I mean, he's still Patrice Bergeron. He's in the prime of his career. This guy isn't that far removed, you know, from basically a year from dominating at the Olympics, you know, at both ends of the ice, not so much offensively, Rich. But I look at this team, and it's still a team that's going to make the playoffs. Now, it's anybody's guess right now where they'll finish. I mean, they could finish as low as 7th or 8th, or maybe they'll sneak into the top 5. But I mean, they're in a position right now with 44 points where, you know, you're 10 points back of the teams that are, you know, in the top four. And that's not easy to make up, Drew. So I don't think it's panic time. And I agree with Richie. I mean, you know, Jacobs, the owner there, the son of Jeremy Jacobs, you know, he can say whatever he wants. I think they're a little bit worried, but I don't see them. I mean, this talk of a guy like Milan Lucic getting traded, Richie, I don't see it happening.
No, more so expect there to be like an Antoine Vermette coming in. Peter Chiarelli, you know, familiar with him from Ottawa days. A guy who can play wing and center. Is he exactly what they need? No, I think they need a scoring winger, frankly. I'm not sure if Vermette's that guy, but he's an upgrade over what they have right now, sure. But, you know, Bob McKenzie talks about the guys who are struggling. If you look at the stats, though, and again, they don't speak to everything, but Bertrand's got 28 points in 39 games, and Marchand's got 23 and 37, and, you know, Krejci's got 15 and 20. They're not so off of their career norms. No. I mean, Lucic is way down, obviously, with 18 points in 39 games and only 6 goals. I mean, this guy scored 30 goals, 26, 25 goals before.
Right, but you got to remember that 2 years ago, not last year. Last year, Milan Lucic was good, but two years ago, he wasn't very good either.
In the lockout year. Yes, he wasn't.
No, he wasn't. I mean, so it's, you know,
it was good in the playoffs.
Yeah, but we keep thinking you're going to get this dominant Milan Lucic. But, I mean, if you take his last, you know, you take his last 160 NHL games.
Yeah, but Drew, hold on. He had 62 points in 2010-11, 61 in 11-12. That's pretty consistent right there. Okay. Right. Last year, he had 59. That is within a point each year, a couple points each year. The lockout year, he had 27 points in 46 games. But in the playoffs, he had 19 and 22. So, I mean, this is a huge drop-off for him. And it's just a physical play. You see him, he's not effective right now. So that's the big drop-off. They don't. Let's get back to when we saw them here. What was the biggest issue?
They couldn't score.
They have no scoring wingers.
Krejci and Bergeron are pass-first centers. You need to complement pass-first centers with scores. So, again, back to that. Let's get down to the facts here. Horton, replaced with Iginla, replaced with no one. Sagan, replaced with Smith. Drop-offs in skill level from the wing, because Sagan played wing when he was there. Jágr, nothing. You haven't had replacements for those guys. So, you're a team that plays a suffocating style and succeeds when ahead and defending and pressuring the other team to make mistakes. You can't score. It's so much effort to score that now you're defending more. You have less effort, you have less ability to, you know, exert that energy on offense. Your defense, obviously, as he mentions, Boychuk. You know, Rask has been good. We had Jack Edwards on. He's been good, but not at the level maybe they want him to be. So there's a lot of things here. But at the same time, they're a point out of the playoffs. I know games in hand. With half the season left, the sky isn't falling here.
No, the sky's not falling. But is their window as a cup contender closing?
I think it is. And I don't think they're a contender this year. That
well, I don't know about that. And I think that depends as a year. I think your window closing is really a Chara's window closing. The rest of the guys aren't old.
No.
I know. But, no. I mean, how do you replace? So, let's, you know, Chara gets another year older next year. You know, you can't really bring in very many reinforcements because you have severe salary cap issues.
And that's why
Boychuk isn't there anymore. That's why Sean Thornton's not there anymore. That's why a lot of your sort of core bottom line, bottom six guys aren't there anymore.
Why Lucic's performance hurt you because he's making big money.
Sure. So, I mean, if your window isn't closing, like, who's coming to replace Zdeno Chara? How, you know, I know that, you know, Dougie Hamilton's going to get better.
No, he's not Chara.
But he's not Chara.
No.
And then Torrey Krug's well,
you're
a nice
you're
player.
Never going to replace Chara.
I know you're never going to replace Chara, but it's like sort of like when you're trying
so
to
the
replace...
Window, yeah, the window is closing. Yeah.
I don't think it is. I disagree with you guys. I don't think it's closing. The core of this team is still
not
young
closed,
enough.
Rich. Closing.
I mean, the core of this team is still young enough to me to have an effect.
Well, where's your reinforcements coming from though?
Well, I don't know where it's coming from right now. I mean, Chara's not... He's not retiring, guys. He's still playing.
Sure. And that's not to say, Rich, I should say, I don't think that the Boston Bruins can't win a playoff round. I just think... In the next few years, you look at some of the up-and-coming teams in the East. To me, the Boston Bruins, they have to change my opinion, I guess, going forward here for the rest of the season. But I think other teams in the East have caught up. But Rich makes a good point. I mean, you talk about Bergeron, Lucic, Brad Marchand, Dougie Hamilton, Tuukka Rask isn't old.
I mean,
Torrey Krug. You can throw in Riley Smith. Erickson's got a lot of
Soderberg.
Hockey. Soderberg. So, I mean, they're going to be a good team.
A free agent at the end of the season.
I think the window closes not this year or next year, but I think it's closing in the sense of them being a dominant team. I don't think the Bruins are a dominant team anymore.
Carl Soderberg is going to want a fair bit of money. He's got 27 points in 40 games. He's going to want a fair bit of money. And then, you know, you lose a center. All of a sudden, your center depth, which is the strength of your team, takes a bit of a hit as well. I mean, times are certainly not panic time in Boston because you have a ton of talent still. But I think times are certainly getting a lot more interesting there.
I think more so Drew than Ezzy here. I think you're overreacting. I don't think this team is in as dire straits as you think.
No, I don't think it's dire straits, Rich. I think the main point, you know...
I think Remus should play some dire straits as we go to break.
No, I think the main point in this segment is, I mean, this is a team that won the Stanley Cup in 2011, and it's a team that has been a contender, and I personally don't think they're a contender this year. That's really what I'm saying. I think they're a good team. I think... for me, you know, Pittsburgh, Tampa, Islanders in the East, those are better teams.
I think they could beat... all those teams, probably except for Tampa right now. I think Tampa's really looking good, but I don't think there's that. You know, I don't think that they'd play Montreal and get blown out here, guys. The speed would be an issue, but I just think they're gonna get a reinforcement or two up here before the trade deadline, and they play a lot of hockey too. We should also note that a lot of playoff games, a lot of wear and tear on the tires here. It doesn't mean that you can't get a little rest and come back, but sometimes it catches up at some point in the season. Again, they're in a bad conference. We're talking about division matchups here. Who knows who they match up against in that first round? Getting out of your division is different than top seed, bottom seed now, like in the Western Conference, like it used to be in the Eastern Conference, right?
Sure.
So I just don't think they're done yet. And remember, they got a goaltender who can steal games too, and not every team can say that.
Let's go to break. Needless to say, of course, Zdeno Chara just scored for the Bruins. Again, as they're tied 1-1 against the Pittsburgh Penguins.
So disregard everything we just said.
Yeah, but I think most people do that anyways. Let's head to break. One final segment. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening
listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment this Wednesday evening with NHL Midweek. It's brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, the longest-running independent comedy club in North America. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Just announced a new concert series event coming up in, I believe it's March. It's going to be John Doerr, television star. You've seen him on Conan O'Brien. You've seen him on Just for Laughs. You've seen him pretty much everywhere on the Comedy Network. John Doerr, March 19th through 21st at Rumors. Tickets go on sale this Friday at 2 p.m. One person who wasn't in a laughing mood earlier today was Minnesota Wild head coach Mike Yeo. He went a little bit nuts after his team's lackadaisical start to practice.
The way we respond to a loss. Practice like this. We up. Pull. Guys not ready to go. What, you think we don't need practice?
Minnesota Wild continue to struggle, a team that people had a lot of high hopes for. 18-15-5 right now, 41 points. Currently 6 points out of a playoff spot in the Western Conference, granted still with a couple games in hand. Pressure getting to Mr. Yeo there in Minnesota?
More so, can Thomas Vanek actually upset a coach individually that much? That's I'm just kidding. Thomas Vanek is easy to point at, but... you know, to me, first off, that stuff is awesome. I love to see that out of coaches, Richie, and it's hockey, and the Minnesota Wild, you know, they've had a rough year, and, you know, we've seen the Minnesota Wild, especially with those, you know, those two back-to-back games, the Jets were able to win one of them in St. Paul, but, you know, this team has been ravaged by the mumps and the norovirus and all this stuff, and, you know, guys like Mikko Koivu, and you can go down the list, guys that have struggled. I mean, you know, the normal guys, Parise and Pominville, they're still leading the team, and a guy like Niederreiter's having a good year, Rich. But to me, I look at this and I say, this is a guy that's not happy with what's happening in practice, the habits, and he's trying to get through to the players.
Yeah, I mean, this is your classic Twitter topic, right? People are bored at work. Coach swears a bunch. Michael Russo tweets about it, and everybody's talking about it. I mean, how often does this happen? Coaches go off and practice quite often.
Yep.
And you don't get what you want from your team. You're trying to prompt more out of them, and you have to show emotion. And, you know, Thomas Vanek actually said, you know, he's happy to see the coach show emotion, which is pretty ironic. But in all honesty, I think
that's a good one,
Rick. I think this is kind of something out of nothing here. I mean, he's not happy with the team's performance. Is that a surprise? If you follow hockey, that's not a surprise. Is it a surprise that the coach got mad? I mean, to me, again, if you follow played hockey, it's not a surprise. Coach is emotional. He's not happy with the team's performance. So I think it's much ado about nothing. As he mentions, the issues that they've gone through so far this year, now Zach Parise is away from the team going through something as well. It's difficult. So
yeah.
I just don't think, again, this is Randy Carlyle talks about this and how everybody talks about every little thing now, and Michael Tracos mentioned it when we spoke to him earlier as well. I mean, I'm not so sure how big of an issue this is.
Here's Mike Yeo after practice talking about his during practice meltdown.
Well, we weren't good enough.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not in a position where we can come in and be, let alone decent in practice, bad in practice. So I'm not going to accept that.
What was, how heated did it get, and, you know, your reaction to leave? I mean, is that as fired up as you've ever been?
Well, I think I made my point at that time, and so that was enough.
You know what, Drew, I'll just jump in here. I like that Mike Yeo stood by, you know, what he did in practice, and he didn't, you know, I mean, was he a little bit too worked up? Fine. But, I mean, he didn't like what he saw in practice, and he let the players know, Rich.
I would say it's a little bit calculated, too. It's emotional and it's calculated. It's both.
Sure. I mean, he's not happy with the team's play. He's not, you know, just snapping.
There's no coach in the league who thinks his team can play at 75% and still win.
And, Richie, the Minnesota Wild, I mean, obviously, you know, we feel bad what's going on with JP Parise in there. But, mm-hmm. I mean, when you're talking about Zach Parise, Ryan Suter, Thomas Vent, I mean, there's a lot of guys making a lot of money there. And this team, guys, is in danger of missing the playoffs, like serious danger. We're at the midway point of the season. They got to go on a run here.
Yeah, they're not playing in the Eastern Conference like the Bruins. That's right. Like the Bruins are. They're going to have to jump over some pretty good teams.
They need better goaltending too. Yeah. I mean, Vlasic had that goal last night, but does Kemper want that back? I believe it was Kemper. Does he want that back? There's certain stuff there. All year, their goaltending hasn't been good enough.
Yeah, Yo actually addressed that at that goal last night after the game, saying pretty much, not throwing the goalie under the bus, because the goalie would probably admit that. He said, that goal can't go in overtime.
Well, there you go. So, I mean, that's probably the biggest issue. Mike Yo has his extension from last year. I believe it was in May of 2014. He's not getting fired. So this is on the players, and that's a good thing. And Yo's trying to get them going.
Yeah, it was a weak goal that beat Darcy Kemper last night in overtime. But, I mean, it's
nice shot.
It's on Chuck Fletcher.
That's two game winners in a row for Vlasic.
Yeah, I saw
same spot, too.
Yeah. It's on Chuck Fletcher to still have not resolved this goaltending situation.
Well, it's on Chuck Fletcher. I think you're right about that, Drew, and to the extent also that you spend a lot of money on a guy like Vanek, when really, I mean, is that your biggest need? So that's fair, but granted, Chuck Fletcher's also done a real nice job of signing all that those back-enders to pretty reasonable deals, below market value deals, so good on him for that. But yeah, you're right. He needs to address the goaltending. That's an issue, for sure, and this team has a lot of talent, and it's odd. I think it might have been Elliot Friedman who wrote about this, but it's odd that they prevent the least amount of, the least amount of shots, I guess it would be, in the league. They allow the least amount of shots in the league. That would make more sense. Yet, their goals against is not very impressive. You can't have that. That doesn't work.
That's right. You're not giving up any shots, and yet they're going in. That's really where your problems, you don't need to delve too deep to know that. Wanted to end the show today just by sending our best wishes out to Matthew West. You might know him better as Cap Geek. Really just an indispensable site for everybody in the hockey world, fans of the game and those of us in the media. I mean, I don't think we ever had a show where I didn't go to CapGeek as a resource in the course of the show. And he's, announced Saturday night during Hockey Night in Canada, during the Jets-Leafs game, that, CapGeek is going to permanently cease operations. He's undergoing some sort of health issue. We don't know what it is. But on behalf of all of us, and I'm sure everybody at the station, because we all at the station use this website, we want to send our best to Matthew and hope that he, fights through whatever he's going through and is on the road to recovery sooner rather than later, and to thank him for all the great work he's done with that website over the last number of years, because it truly was an absolutely indispensable site for all those involved in the game of hockey.
Amen to that.
That's it for this Wednesday and NHL midweek. A big thank you to our guest Michael Trakos of the National Post and Tyson Nash of Fox Sports Arizona. In case you missed any of it, it's available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and on our website, illegalcurve.com. Follow us on Twitter at illegalcurve, facebook.com/illegalcurve. Thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, and Bernstein's Deli. Reminder, Saturday, note the start time, 3 p.m., for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Timu Solani Nation, that's what TSN stands for this coming weekend here on this station. For Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock, for producer Remus, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Thanks for listening, and we wish you a good night and good luck.
You've been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.